application for Wednesday, April 25th, 2007. We will be an evolving committee today as members get off the floor and into the hearing room. We are able to start a public hearing, though, with just the chair in attendance. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3438. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming to testify on this bill. I just wanted to bring to mind that we do have about 33 or 4 minutes, actually, before we have to give up the room. So just to make sure everyone gets a chance to testify on this. Mr. Olson, if you'd be so kind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. House Bill 3438 authorizes certain contiguous school districts to establish education funding district. It authorizes the funding district to impose taxes for distribution to contiguous school districts. It directs the Department of Revenue to administer taxes and remit revenues to funding districts for further distribution to school districts. It requires elector approval of funding district formation, taxes, boundary changes, and dissolution. Takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment. Has a subsequent referral to Committee on Revenue. And to the speakers, well, I think after the proponent, we'll call you up in threes. Just a reminder, in addition to this bill, we have several others, and someone else takes over the room at 3 o'clock. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Roblin, it's always great to see you.
Nice to be here, and I can change places, come up there shortly. We have a group of people from school districts that are here today, and they're really going to talk about the particulars. But I just wanted to make a general statement that says school funding is a very difficult issue, and we spend a lot of time here in the legislature dealing with school funding. And we
have to introduce yourself for the record.
Oh, thank you. I always forget to do that. Representative Arnie Roblin, District 9.
Thank you. And we
forget when we get here in this building about the differences that exist around our state and the kinds of problems that each of those different regions might have. And a group of concerned citizens and superintendents and local citizens got together over the last year or so, and I'll explain that more, and said, you know, we need to talk about a regional solution, something that can help us, and not expect always that the state and their regular formula is going to work for everybody, because we have unique problems. Declining enrollment, we've heard that talked about here. We had a bill earlier in the session that dealt with the very, very small schools and the problems that they have throughout the state. So we've dealt with Portland Public Schools with regard to their needs and the things with declining enrollment. So we started to realize that there is regional differences, and maybe there are regional solutions for those differences. And so what you see before you is an attempt by those people in our communities to come together and try to come up with a solution that might help regionally. And I guess I would love you to hear the kinds of things that are happening in some of these rural school districts, very small to reasonably large. The largest of the school districts actually makes up to like the 5A level and the sports things, but it's in the middle to the bottom of that level. So we don't have any huge schools or school districts, but and we share one thing in common in this group, and that is that we come from the south coast of Oregon, a beautiful place, and I wish everyone would come and visit and enjoy. So with that, I'll let them speak for it, and I'll come take my seat upstairs. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. Would you go ahead and call a panel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First three witnesses, Kent Kliwitz, Forrest Bell, and Ike Lonstein.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Morning, Chair Buckley. And Representative Roblin, I have a written statement that I've shared with your clerk, but I am going to choose just to read a portion of that. Representative Roblin pretty much gave you a pretty decent background of our efforts and why, so I'm just going to read just a little bit to you. So, in the past 10 years, excuse me, I need to introduce myself as Kent Kliwitz, Myrtle Point Superintendent, part of the South Coast Regional Funding issue that we're talking about here. In the past 10 years, Myrtle Point School District enrollment has dropped 147 students. Based on current funding, this calculates to over $900,000 in lost revenue this year alone. It has forced district officials to close schools, cut programs, eliminate staff, and put off much of the needed facility upkeep. What was once a well-known thriving school district has been reduced to a recovering system that can barely support minimum graduation standards. We know that the economy has been difficult for the entire state in recent years, and things have are beginning to look better. However, our message to you is that the South Coast is that for the South Coast, it hasn't changed. Even with the increase in state funding being discussed now, most districts on the South Coast will not be able to return to their current program levels. Declining enrollment and increasing costs will take away much, if not all, of the increase we might have seen. This is especially of concern for our smallest districts, such as Port Orford, Langlois, and Mapleton. We are fearful that if relief doesn't come for them very soon, they will no longer be able to exist. I want all Myrtle Point School District students and all South Coast students to have the same educational advantages that come to many of our larger sister districts across the state during a growing economy. Please hear our concerns and honor our efforts to help provide for a secure and stable system of funding that is not reliant on student enrollment, but reflects the educational demand for increased rigor, a broader base of knowledge, and growing real-life experiences.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Forrest Bell, and I am the part-time superintendent of schools in Reedsport School District. We've made massive cuts in the last number of years. In 0001, we reduced four teachers. In 0102, three more. In 0203, three teachers and an administrator. In 0304, we closed our middle school, lost our JV sports, reduced one administrator more, one more custodian, one more instructional assistant, a halftime music teacher, and we shortened our school year by 6 days. In 0405, we reduced six more teachers, cut our athletic programs by 20%, and cut our staff development in half. In 0506, we reduced two more teachers, reduced the superintendent's job to 40%, and shortened our school year once again by 4 days. Looking forward to 0708, given the legislature's commitment to a $6 billion budget, we will once again be able to retain, for the first time, our current personnel and programs. Given our recent and drastic cuts, you can imagine how our district feels about competing for any additional funds the legislature may provide. But it is not productive for us to continue to count our losses to the Reedsport community. We need to create a vision for the future of public education in our community and along our coast, and we need to make certain that it's a vision that is doable. To that end, in the documents that I will be sharing with you, we have compared Reedsport's current services with those of the quality education model. And the result is this. We have one elementary school left, Highland Elementary, and it can be restored to the quality education model with just over $600,000 of additional ongoing revenue. Our remaining high school, which is a junior-senior high school, could reach that goal with an additional $675,000. And that's our goal for our community, to provide a quality education. It is what it will take to assure people moving into Reedsport that their children will receive a quality education. Obviously, our preference is that the legislature would fully fund the quality education model, but that probably won't happen in my professional life nor yours. We also do not expect... We also do not expect... Should I take a pause? We also don't expect that other districts are going to change the funding formula to benefit those of us who have steeply declining enrollment. Last year, a group of concerned citizens from different walks of life along the South Coast came together in a series of meetings to seek a regional solution for a regional problem. The 10 school districts stretching from Florence on the north to Brookings on the south have found themselves in the same boat. We all have severely declining enrollment, discarded programs, and pernicious funding problems as a result. We don't expect that school districts in other areas of the state are going to help us out, and we're not going to ask them to do that. What we are asking is that HB 3438 be given your full consideration. It's not a perfect solution, and we understand that, but it might be the best hope for those of us school districts, the 10 school districts that stretch along the South Coast. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I didn't mean to laugh. Just said, I look at my professional life, and I'm just about to turn 50. I think I got to be able to get this done. So thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ike Launstein, and I'm here today representing economic development. I wear many different hats in the Reedsport community, but today I'm speaking from that standpoint. For economic development, I am an officer on a group called the Lower Umpqua Economic Development Forum. It's all a volunteer, community-based group that's actively working to recruit business and industry to our community. But what I have to say today applies equally to the entire South Coast. And the first fact that I just, and I know this goes without being said, but I'm going to say it anyway, and that is that for economic development to take place in our area, meaning the entire South Coast, we have to have quality schools. Businesses that we are interested in recruiting are not going to come to our communities unless there are quality schools to provide them workers, but even before that, to provide quality education for those workers who are employed. And that we do not, frankly, have a quality education system at this time because of the financing. We have been through student decline for so many years. Student number decline can be dealt with when it's a short-term problem. The long-term, it is not possible. The districts on the South Coast have been reeling from decades of declining student enrollment, and it has made it impossible. Consequently, in our community, we have kindergarten classes of 30, first grade classes of 28. Folks, as Oregonians, we should be ashamed that that's happening anywhere in the state. And we need to correct that if we're going to attract industry. The Reedsport area, it appears, is going to be the first location in the state of Oregon to have a private company come in and generate electricity from waves. They're moving forward with that. I see this as a golden opportunity for our community to become a leader, to establish an area where professionals would come and do the study and work that's necessary to take this and other energy forms forward. That's not going to happen unless we have quality schools. The professionals necessary will not move to the South Coast unless there are quality schools for them to enroll their children. So, House Bill 3438, we're asking for an opportunity to take our destiny into our own hands. We're not here asking for money. We're asking that we be allowed to go to our citizens and ask for funds so that we can fix the problem that we have in our area. And with that, I will stop right there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate you coming here today and appreciate your testimony on this proposal. Mr. Olson, it looks like we have Robert Law, Karen Conley, and Ruby Price.
Yes.
That's okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman Buckley and Representative Roebling. I'm Robert Law, family physician from Reedsport, one of town's family doctors, and I'm testifying today, not on universal access for healthcare or fluoridation in the water, but to talk about the relationship of the quality of education in our community to the health, the literal and figurative health of our town. We're isolated, but we're not insulated. And being
Doctor,
small,
the mic's really sensitive.
Oh, sorry.
So just if you even lean back up, we'll be able to hear you.
We're not insulated, even though we're isolated from the effects of what I see is the direct connection. We can see it between healthcare and education and the viability of the economy of our community. We're probably better able to see that because of that. I want to cite a specific concrete example of what the speakers before me have said. By the end of this year, our medical community will have lost four of our key health professionals. two of the family physicians in my group, which is 25% of the primary care in our town, are only anesthetists, without whom you can't do surgery, and our head respiratory therapist. And we're not, and all of them have cited the quality of education for their kids as one of the key reasons why they're having to leave. So not only that are we losing them, but people leave, they don't come back. We have a very difficult time recruiting young professionals back to our town to take their places. The first thing that anybody asks when they come to Reedsport, when we recruit, and we've been doing a lot of this over the years since I've been there, but the first thing that they ask is, you know, what are the schools like? When I came, that was a sell. But we're having a much harder time now trying to convince people to come. If, for instance, this morning I found out no AP English next year in the high school. Well, I'm going to have a real hard time convincing any colleague to come when their child that wants to go to college and maybe follow in mom or dad's footsteps isn't going to have AP English or AP Calculus or any of the advanced programs. Now, this is so critical to our community because healthcare is not only part of the critical infrastructure to attract more business and economic development, but it's actually one of the big economic engines in our town. The medical community is the key employer. It's the largest employer in our town, and I can't say enough how critical an effect this has when we're losing in our school system the ability to maintain the quality education. Now, shrinking school districts like ours and shrinking enrollments are having a harder and harder time. We've not really been able to keep up. In the current proposed budget, I think most school districts are going to do okay. But ours, actually, we're not able to provide equal funding, does not provide equal education in our little town. And we need to have a way to get a leg up. House Bill 3438 is a way for us to give us a shot at doing this on our own hook, and it's a way to help us help ourselves.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. Good afternoon, Chairperson Buckley and Representative Roblin. My name is Ruby Price, and I'm the superintendent of the Port Orford Langley School District and a part of the South Coast Funding Forum. And I am here to have before you a face of one of the districts that, as Superintendent Kent Klevick said, it's going to go away. Because districts like Port Orford Langlois are going to go away. Every time we lose kids, we can't keep up. When we can't keep up, we can't attract staff. We've cut the staff to the barest levels. We have one teacher to teach each subject area at the high school, and so we have very few electives. The electives that we do need to have need to be now pared down so that we can teach to the increased science and math requirements. There is a lack of family support jobs in the area. It is a depressed area with the fishing industry and the timber and all those things that our people used to be able to count on. And so we have more retirees and fewer children, and therefore it's just a catch-22. In 1997-98, we started the school year with 544 students. That would be, in today's dollars, $6.9 million. Now we have 333. That we are, and we're thankful for it, will give us $4.2 million. And in this day and age of increasing budgets, we have cut our budget $2.7 million during this interim. Yet we need to have all the systems in place. We still have a school to run, still have a district to run. This year, if we are at the governor's budget, the increase will be $95,000. To the district with cost of living, we will be only $3,000 short. So we're really close and thankful for that almost break even. This is a big year for us. And I am here on behalf of our little district and the merchants and the business owners who these fine people are not asking for an increased ADM. They're not asking for more money, but they're simply asking that you allow them, with this bill, House Bill 3438, a chance for them to help themselves and save our little district, which will go away under the present system.
Thank you, Superintendent. I got to ask this one question that came up. Has your district tried a local option? Has that been attempted?
I'd have to look at that. I do not know. It's my first year there.
Well, I hope your work goes very well.
Thank you.
You've been there for a long time.
Thank you. My name is Karen Conley, and I'm a teacher at Coquille High School. It's nice to be here today and talk to both of you, all three of you now. I have been teaching in Coquille for 12 years, and when I came to Coquille 12 years ago, we had approximately 75 teachers in our district. Today, we have 47. After budget, we will be down to probably 46, if not more. We were told last night that even though we will be getting more money, we will actually be making about $250,000 worth of cuts for next school year. I kind of want to tell you what we don't have anymore. I can't tell you what we have that we didn't have before. We no longer have art for our elementary students. We no longer have PE for our elementary students. Our middle school students don't have a counselor. We don't have a full-time math teacher at the high school, which makes it very interesting to try to meet these new graduation requirements. around math and science. It is a real challenge to recruit people to come to Coquille. We can't offer them the salaries that they deserve. We can't offer them the promise of funding. I'm a history teacher who only has a classroom set of history textbooks because for the last 12 years we have given up textbooks in order to keep staff. Those are the kinds of things that we are dealing with in Coquille. In the 12 years I've been there, we have closed 3 school buildings. We now only have 3. And if enrollment continues to decline, we'll go down to 2 buildings. When I started, we had about 450 kids at the high school. We now have 312. In the month of February, we had a net loss of 18 students in our district, which may not seem like a lot, but when you have less than 1,000 students, 18 in one month is a huge, huge loss, and I don't know how we're going to recoup that. So thank you for taking the time to listen to us today. I've been working on this for a long time, and we are here asking for a chance to solve our own problem. As everybody before me has said, we're not asking for money. We're asking for the opportunity to take care of this problem ourselves. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Olson.
Susan Anderson, Julie Noel, and Bill Perry. Okay.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Susan Anderson. I represent all of the education employees on the South Coast, but I'm also here, more importantly, as a local taxpayer and as an ex-teacher. When I came to the South Coast, I was already appalled. I've been there almost 10 years, to see the level of opportunities for the kids there. I came out of a state where vocational ed was a guarantee for all children. We had a statewide vocational system. PE and art and music were not considered luxuries. They were guarantees at all grade levels. We did not fund our schools all that well in Ohio, but when I look at where they are compared to where we are here, suddenly it seems a whole lot better than it was when I was in the trenches and we were fighting for every dime. On the South Coast, as people have said, we have been looking at this. This is not a unique or a new problem. This is our third legislative session. We've come to the legislature with asking for some kind of assistance and resolution to our unique situation. We've tried adjusting the state formula. That's failed twice. Both times we were told, don't come ask us for more money. We've tried local options. I'm the one who can speak to that.
Thank you.
Most of the districts on the South Coast can't raise enough money in a local option to offset it. In Mapleton, for instance, we tried. Mapleton will be our first district we will lose. We have potentially 2 years left in the cash reserve, and after that, if something doesn't happen, it will go under. We can't really consolidate it with another district because right now the law only allows you to consolidate with one district. That's a huge land mass of the Mapleton School District, but small student population. So if it is consolidated into Siusla School District to the west, we have kids on a bus for 2.5 hours one way. If they go east, we have 2.5 hours. If they go north to Lincoln County, it's 2.5 hours for some of the students. So they need that community school. They just had to make the decision last week to close their pool. We fought closing it for the last 5 years. So we looked at a local option. A local option there would raise $85,000. The cost of running the election is $125,000. Mm-hmm. Somehow the logic didn't work. That's true of most of the districts. Powers, Myrtle Point, Coquille, Port Orford. They don't have that option. So we've looked at that option.
Thank you.
So when we came together, it was very clear something needed to happen. And if we were going to solve the problem, we needed to do it ourselves. We spent months and months talking with lots of different people about what is a possible solution. This is one of the ones we came up with to say, let us try to deal with it locally. Would I like to be able to come here and say we need more money? You betcha. Would I like to be able to say, do something for the declining enrollment schools? But you only have so much money in the state budget. And to raise ADM to solve our problem means the rest of the budget goes down the tubes. So we understand that, but we would like the opportunity to investigate one more option for us. We've tried consolidating districts. It doesn't pass because folks want to hold on to their local school district, right, and they don't understand the need to funnel some of that administrative money back into the classroom. And even if it succeeded, it would be a short-term solution.
I'm sorry to have to move along, but I do, because
that's fine. But we do appreciate the time. We know we got squeezed in at the last minute, and we thank you for that.
I appreciate your testimony, and thank you for your advocacy for education. Yes, with you. Give that.
My name is Julie Knoll. I teach third grade at Reedsport, and this is my 10th year teaching. All of it's been at Reedsport. I came up here to remind you guys that this whole thing that we're working for is to stabilize our funding for our area, and it's really for the kids. You know, I look at 27 kids every day in my classroom and think of what things they are missing out on, and I'm not the only one, and I think you guys hear the money issue all the time, but it's really about the kids and what we can do better for the kids on the South Coast, and I really want you to remember that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Bill Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm with the Oregon Restaurant Association, and I just wanted to say that, obviously, I grew up in Representative Dallum's district, and there's been a lot of consolidation of small schools out there, and I understand the problem, and I have some friends that have faced it, and there are some real issues, and I just want to say we support stronger education, have done some different things as an organization, so I am sympathetic to their issues. From the standpoint of this particular bill, though, we feel that it's the wrong solution. One of the things is that it targets certain members of the community. We've talked about community and everything else. It's targeted a certain aspect of retail operations, not all retail operations. So what you start to do is get some of the businesses in the local committee or community that have to collect this tax that, obviously, in a non-sales tax state, is unpopular. So only certain members of the community have to deal with the problem, not all members of the community. That's kind of the first issue. The second is these taxes are traditionally unpopular. We just had one in Grants Pass and it went down 72-23. In Salem here a while ago, you had an entertainment tax just like this that it actually, I would say, drastically changed the elections. And the first thing that the new city council did was come in and repeal a tax. It was an entertainment tax much like this. And we support, basically, overall tax reform. And I would just say that I think these local districts being created on top of other local governments that are taxing pollute the waters for overall tax reform. So you're creating more taxing districts, which irritates voters, and they're less likely to try to accomplish something that is going to be beneficial to everybody. And so I am very, very sympathetic to the issues they have. They're real issues. They need to be dealt with. Having targeted tax like this, both on a local community or a specific business, I don't think is beneficial in the long run, and I think creates more division than community spirit. I will say, on that note, I'm testifying tomorrow for the sales tax because I do think that there are some things that need to be discussed and everything else, but those are on a statewide basis. Those are comprehensive in nature. I know they tried local option. It is a comprehensive that everybody gets treated equally. So, I mean, there are different things that we can work with them and try, but these targeted taxes, both at a local level and a specific business type, are just really frustrating for a lot of businesses. We see them in the cell phone industry and others. So with that, I understand the problems. I am sympathetic to the problems. I just don't think this bill is a solution to those problems. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fair. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming forward. Members, I'm very pleased that I actually have gotten the testimony today. It's, you know, we have had a lot of discussions in terms of rural school districts, but really the coast, be able to hear the problems on the coast is important for us to know that it's not just the other side of the mountains. It's throughout our state where we're facing these problems. I appreciate the ideas being brought forward. Thank you, Representative Roblin, and we will continue to discuss. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3438, and Mr. Olson, on the speech, that's probably the best. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3141. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3141, the original text of the bill was designed to allow students to advance to the next grade level in a particular subject if the student displays proficiency in the subject. But the committee has before it an amendment which would replace the entire text and would direct the Department of Education to establish a program to increase the number of speech-language pathologists and speech-language pathology assistants in Oregon, direct the department to award grants to students studying to become speech-language pathologists or assistants, and provide stipends to those pathologists employed by ESDs or school districts to provide training. It would establish the requirements, including mandatory work in this field after graduation, within 3 years of graduation, establish grant levels of 2,000 an academic year for assistants and 9,000 an academic year for pathologists. Establish stipend levels, establish a speech-language pathologist training fund, appropriate money from the fund to the department, and appropriate $496,680 to the department for the program. Declares an emergency and takes effect on July 1st.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Do we have people signed up to
speak? Yes, we have Ozzie Rose, Maureen Casey, and John Tracy.
I assure you, Mr. Rose can handle it, and Superintendent Casey. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Oh, I didn't see him.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I'm representing the Education Service Districts. Today, I'm here to help present a proposal that was developed by Dr. Casey and others to meet a problem. We have a situation in Oregon. We have over 200 vacant positions across the state in speech pathology. Our own universities don't have the resources to gear up to produce people fast enough. And this proposal comes from a group of school people and speech pathology people, which will help rectify that problem. And I'll let them explain it to you. We got permission from the sponsor of the bill that you have before you to quote gut and stuff, and we're hopeful you will send this down to Ways and Means. So we have Senator Cruz and other Senator working for us. It's a solution to a problem that needs to be solved, and hopefully after you hear the testimony you'll agree with us. Thank you.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, I'm Maureen Casey, and I'm currently the superintendent of Willamette ESD, and fortunately, I'm also a recovering speech-language pathologist, so I can talk rather quickly, and I think we can get through this. I've kind of framed the picture for you. The last paragraph in House Bill 3141 declares an emergency, and truly, this is an emergency. Those 150 to 200 vacancies every single year in Oregon, we only have two training programs. 25 graduates a year from PSU, 25 from U of O, and the majority of them go out of state or stay in those two metro areas. They don't go throughout the state, and they're not filling enough of those vacancies. And even for those few that are graduating, we have to compete with hospitals and rehab centers who pay a lot more than your public school system wages. And so there really is a crisis, not just in Oregon, but nationally. So what's the impact of these unfilled positions? First and foremost, kids are not getting the level of service that they need throughout the state. Secondly, we're killing off the therapists that we do have. These people are on an endangered species list. We've asked them to increase their caseloads for so long that they can't do it anymore, and they don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. They are now leaving and going to other states or hospitals and rehab centers. We are also, and I think not many people understand this, we're being held hostage by national recruiting, private recruiting agencies who are trying to sell us speech-language paths. When we start the school year, we have unfilled positions at exorbitant rates. We have no recourse other than to bring some of these people into Oregon. Districts are spending exorbitant amount of money trying to recruit and retain people. We have one ESD in Eastern Oregon, just made it a priority, spent $36,000 going to every single university program in the country. They currently, as of yesterday, still had five openings, five vacancies left. So it's not working. Here's the proposal before you. Chemeketa Community College has a well-established program, online program for speech-language assistance. We want to recruit speech-language assistants, put them through the program, and here's the beauty of it. It's online. They can enroll from any area of the state, rural, metro. They don't have to leave their families and move to a program. ESDs and local school districts will provide some clinical supervision and the mentoring that they need. So they start out at Chemeketa. They can finish the program, immediately start employment in their local communities with their ESDs or school districts. If they want to keep that job for the rest of their life, fine. If they want to go on and become a licensed speech-language pathologist, Dr. Tracy has established a partnership with Nova Southeast University in Florida, also an online graduate-level program. We also now have an arrangement with Utah State. They will accept Chemeketa's credits and start a career ladder for these people, allowing them to move on. Eventually, they would become licensed people. In exchange for our assistance with these two programs, they would sign a commitment to work upon graduation, continue to work in their local community with their district or ESD for a minimum of 2 years. So it's a grow-your-own program internally. The proposal in front of you, you've got the second page, it says outcomes. I've listed the outcomes, but we could actually put 60 certified speech language assistants in your communities with this proposal and an additional 36 licensed speech language therapists. So with that, I'll stop.
Thank you so much. You've made a very compelling case very quickly as well.
Thank
you. Representative Buckley, Chair Buckley, excuse me, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. John Tracy. I'm here representing the Oregon Speech, Language, and Hearing Association in support of this bill. I'll make it fast.
Thank you,
also. Basically, Maureen outlined the issues, but just a couple of things that really rivet me. Anyway, when you look at a national survey of school speech language pathologists and you look across all of the work settings, you know, where they're employed, the number of vacancies has risen across the country from 25% to 40% since 2002 through 2005. That's a huge increase. Also, data from the U.S. Office of Education shows that when they did a survey of special education administrators, 90% of those responding from the Pacific Coast states indicated that the most frustrating part of their position was inability to hire speech-language pathologists. So, and if you look at the percentages, that's the Pacific Coast states have the worst problem of recruiting speech-language pathologists. Also, basically there's three elements to maintaining a quality staff in schools. One is access to training, so we can get people trained. Two is getting people recruited to work for him, and three is keeping the quality people there. The frustrating issue I think the school districts face, or I know that they face here, is they have virtually no control over the access to training. We can bring people to the door of the university. We can train them when they're there. We can provide the supervision and the mentoring, but we can't get them in the programs when they only take 25 a year. Our university programs turn down 150 to 200 students a year for the two graduate programs in Oregon. We require very, very high graduate record examination scores, extremely high graduate or grade point averages. I mean, you could get into Harvard with a GPA to come to Oregon. So this is something that the school districts have been dealing with for, at least as far as I'm concerned, 15 years. So what this basically does is it proposes to give the school districts control, some control over this problem, to help provide the services to kids. So with that, basically want to end with the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association definitely supports this bill. It will put more speech language pathologists in the public schools of Oregon. The other piece of the speech language pathology assistance is that in our profession, generally, it's all women. I'm a speech language pathologist. I'm the only male graduate to this date from Whittier College in their speech language pathology program. And if you look at a recent study in Central Florida where they looked at recruitment and retention, of the 400 and some respondents, 90% were white and female. So from our group of speech language pathology assistants, we can draw diverse members of different ethnic and racial groups into speech language pathology. So with that, I ask your support for the bill, and thank you for taking the time to listen.
Greatly appreciate you speeding through that and making the case for it. It's a great idea. Thank you, Representative Kahn, for bringing it forward. Do you have something you'd like to say?
What I would share to the committee and Chair Buckley very briefly, when I was approached about this bill, I was a special ed teacher, and as a principal, we had a need in our district to really develop literacy for second language learners. It was not uncommon for me to do recruiting and interviews by phone, teleprompter, whatever it is, in order to meet the needs of our children. And we are the innovative education part of that committee here. We need to meet this need, and I think this is an option that's worth looking at.
I agree with you, Representative, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. There's a concern on the fiscal that came out, and if we can talk between now and Friday, members, I will be carrying over House Bill 3141, House Bill 2584, and House Bill 2790 to Friday at 1 p.m. Maybe we'll be work sessions. And so if we can talk about that between now and then, I think that would be very helpful to address it. And with that, Representatives, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3141. And thank you all for being here this afternoon, and we'll adjourn the hearing for today.